Welcome to Inside the Firm, a podcast dedicated to small business owners and hosted by entrepreneurs Alex Gore and Lance Psycho. Each week, they take you on their journey of how to start, run, and grow a business by bringing you inside their architecture and real estate development firm. Get a behind-the-scenes tour of how these business leaders manage their clients and foster company culture while creating new and innovative projects. And now your hosts, Alex Gore and Lance Psycho.
Welcome to another episode of Inside the Firm. I'm here with Lance Psycho, no nicknames today, and Alex Gore. We have a great show for you today. We're going to talk about superstitions and which ones are real.
Yeah.
Not superstitions, but absolutely real. We got some other stuff, affordable housing and managing. So let's get into it. But before we do, I want to let you know about RevitRocketShip.com. If you are looking to brush up on your Revit skills, train your staff so that you're all on the same page, or just get more efficient, go to RevitRocketShip.com.
I want you to also go over to ArcCAD.com, because if you can't find the product data you're looking for, you might be using the wrong search engine. Broad searches result in consumer products, out-of-date information, and websites that hide or don't have the information you're looking for. If you need specifications, CAD, or BIM, ArcCAD.com is your search engine. Find and download the up-to-date data you need fast. ArcCAD.com is free and requires no registration. So try ArcCAD today. That's ARCAT.com. Got their mug, rocking it. Al, back to you. What are we talking about?
Okay, the seven sales superstitions and why your team believes in them. Mm-hmm. I want to know if you have any of these, or Lance, if you think that these are true.
Can I quickly interject and say why I brought this?
Yes.
Why I brought this up? Eric Bertzlaff of Raptor Engineering, greatest civil engineer in Colorado, by the way.
Yes.
We love him. We love his team. He and I were talking about sales superstitions and why we didn't get a project. And I was like, I think you're right, bro. So, honestly.
Okay.
I'm not even joking.
Sales is full of uncertainty. I'm reading from the article. That's the thing with sales. Even if you work hard and do everything right, sometimes it feels like winning needs a pinch of luck. And then going down, but science shows us that the feeling of control, even an illusionary feeling of control, can reduce stress and thereby increase performance. So why, let's just go into, I'm going to read each one of them.
And these are just quotes from
people,
CEOs and business leaders and all the salespeople.
Yep. Mm-hmm. I never, that's all caps, celebrate a verbal close or tell my CEO a deal is done until I get the final signature from my client.
Yes. So what we did is, we both moved our project folders from future projects into current projects before the signatures happened, and then it died. And I'm like, yeah, so don't do that. Just like our file system is, there's future projects, and those future projects are like, we put out proposals or we're working on the proposal, and then I move them methodically into, so does Al, current projects once they're signed, and then they get put in the project tracker, the hopper, so we can assign it to a staff.
And I swear
this is real.
I remember starting out and being very excited about a couple projects, and then they never signed. So like, it's just such a letdown. So don't bring yourself up to be let down. There's a And then
sales is tough, and so I think there's a psychology here, you know, the positivity and keeping up the positive energy.
Some people sign within a week. Some people it takes a year.
And I think what's your latest line in the sand where you say, okay, we should be only getting 30% of sales.
Between 30% and 60%. I think it's a fine. If you get between 30% and 60%.
I'd say 30 and 50. If I had to say, like, the squeeze is where, like, you should be comfortable losing half to maybe a little bit over half of what you're going after, because you're probably not charging enough money.
Yep. And why I say that is because, oh, I'm at 52%. Do I need to drastically change? Like, no. That's why I say 30 and 60. Then it's like, okay, am I charging too little? What's going on here? Yep. Okay. Number two, we all have reps on our team that consistently sandbag. Some of my most senior reps still refuse to tell me when they had a good meeting or even move a deal to a higher percentage in Salesforce for fear of jinxing the momentum.
Yeah. Austin L. of Walmart Media The next one is, I once had a building in my territory in Soho where I literally lost every single deal. It was my temple of doom. After a while, I determined the entire building was jinxed and never set foot in there again.
Yes.
I don't blame you.
Yes.
Yeah.
It reminds me of basketball and what they say about stats.
Okay.
So they say, you know, let's say you're a 60% shooter, Lance. Say you're a 60% shooter against me, right? And they're like, and let's say for this game, you're shooting like 80%.
Oh, I'm just, yeah, lights right? out.
And let's say you could bet mid-game, and you want to somehow bet that you're going to be an 80% shooter. The stats people are like, no, every time he shoots, he's just 60%. What if I'm a bad defensive player?
Mm.
And then, so what if you are getting 80% because I'm a bad defensive player, and then you play against your brother Luke, and now you're a 40% shooter, and it averages out to 60%. You know what I mean? So, like, there could be something about that. What if it's psychological? What if you, that building gives you a feeling, and then you aren't presenting your best? Like, why are you wasting
Why aren't you presenting your best? Exactly. Like, you need to be, you're trying to put yourself in the, you're trying to be consistently, like, positive, energetic, hilarious, compelling.
Yep. And what if it's like, for some reason, you don't even know it, but when you drive there, you have to park in the shitty parking lot and you hate it. And you tell yourself that you always put on a good face, but like, no, it's not worth it. It's not worth it.
Yep.
Okay, the next one. I have a lucky business card holder. I use it so much the button broke and when it clasps, but I still rocked it for years.
Okay. He's just staying in the mindset. You're staying in the pocket.
Yep.
Staying in the zone.
Yep.
Stay on that. Yeah. Next one.
I never duplicate and reuse a proposal from a previous closed loss opportunity.
Oh, I might do that. I might do that next.
I like that.
That's interesting. Yeah. Reuse one that I've signed, essentially, and do a save as.
That's good.
That's good. You're carrying that momentum. Hey, that one's new. I appreciate it. I'm going to do that.
Yep. And I don't know if I agree with that because it depends on what gives you good feelings or not. Because sometimes even if I don't get it, if I improve the template to make it cleaner, more clear, more efficient, I might still feel good about that. So whatever vibes.
Yeah, you're still keeping those positive vibes going.
Yep,
100%.
Yep. Okay, next one. I have one special mug I drink coffee from in the morning if I have a big meeting with a new client or if I'm negotiating a house that day. I like this. You want to know why?
I do, yeah, because you were kind of trying to be the anti, like you were trying to steel man the last one. Not steel man, what am I saying? You're being the contrarian to the last one.
Yeah. Why isn't that term coming to us?
I don't know.
It doesn't matter. I feel like this is Tony Robbins, and I feel like this is what he'd do with basketball players is like, what's your routine for warm up? What gets you in the zone? What gets you feeling great? So if it's like, hey, I have a special meeting. I have my special mug. This makes me feel good. It's like
the basketball analogy. It's like shooting free throws, right? That was the big thing with free throws is the routine has to be the same every effing time for these free throws, right?
It's the
mechanics, because then you can get to those crazy levels of percentages of like 75-80%.
Yep.
Shooting free throws.
How many times do you dribble? Where do you pause?
Yep.
What's your follow through? What's your ending?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Very methodical. It's like a golf swing. Right? Golfers?
Yeah.
I'm not a golfer.
I'm going to be so terrible. I'm going in like 2-3 weeks,
I'm excited
whatever.
For you. Yeah. Don't hurt yourself. Don't hurt himself. Everybody pray for him so he doesn't hurt himself again. He's old.
I did hurt myself pretty bad at the driving range, so it's not without cause, you don't say that.
Yeah. 30 seconds left in this 10-minute segment now.
I always wear a blue shirt if I'm closing a piece of business, business, and I know there's a cattle call pitch that lasts the whole day. 12 noon is my lucky time slot. Also, it doesn't hurt to bring the client lunch with a heavy carb so they slip into a food coma while listening to your competitor's afternoon pitches.
Ooh, a little nefarious. I like that.
yeah, awesome.
I think consistency is key. That's what we're saying. Stay positive. Keep the momentum going. All that good stuff. Okay, the next two little articles we got here. on this beautiful Friday is one is from our friends over at the NAHB, the National Association of Home Builders. New nationwide codes mandate a major blow to housing authority. Here we are again. Affordability. Here we are. Carl Harris, the chairman of National Association of Home Builders, NAHB, and a custom home builder from Wichita, Kansas, today issued the following statement. Issued the following statement. After the Biden administration announced that the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, HUD, and U.S. Department of Agriculture, USDA, will insure mortgages for new homes only if they are built to the 2021 International Energy Conservation Code, IECC. Quote, without adequate review and consideration of how it will affect home buyers and renters, HUD and USDA have rammed through a rule that will do little to curb overall energy use in the U.S., but will exacerbate the housing affordability crisis. Studies have shown that building to the 2021 IECC can add up to $31,000 to the price of a new home and take up to 90 years for a home buyer to realize a payback on the added cost of a home. This unreasonable trade-off for a new home buyer will do little to offer meaningful energy savings for residential homes or apartments.
Two things. This on Monday, 4/29, if you go to businessofarchitecture.com, my podcast with them, Why Isn't the AIA Advocating for Truly Affordable Housing? This is exactly what we're talking about.
Really?
Exactly what we're talking about. And why is it only the NAHB that's advocating for this, or at least bringing it up as a topic? AIA architects, I love you. When I meet you, a lot of us do great work. But
I think we have the same goals. It's just who's helping us with the goals.
And then the next one, podcast with Business of Architecture, which will probably be a month or two later, was about like, let's hit it at its source. Nuclear energy isn't as scary as you think it is, right? It's not as scary as you think it is. It can be isolated.
The technology has improved vastly from the meltdowns era. Okay. It's just not there anymore. And frankly, the big meltdown in Chernobyl was literally due to like government incompetence, because it was communism, and it's not the best system of government. Like, that's the fact.
Yep. Exactly. And it isn't this radiation, like it's literally the protons and the neutrons being split. And those are going out, and that's what radiation is. It's just protons and neutrons. And it doesn't go out forever. And it doesn't, like, if you have an isolated piece of nuclear material, yes, it gives it off, but it doesn't keep reacting the way it reacts in a nuclear energy reactor, because basically they're put in water to slow down the nuclei that are going, so that they hit the other atoms, and then it causes that chain reaction. So, like, it's not as scary as you think. Let's hit it at the source. These costs are real. Me and you know that they're real. Some of the stuff that they're doing is ridiculous. Like everything on motion sensor, like, okay, now you're watching a movie at night and you get up to get popcorn and the lights go on. Like, what is going on here?
I'll be completely honest about the motion sensor thing. So we have motion sensor. We formed a sustainable committee here. At F9, a sustainability committee after we had a retreat a couple summers ago. And I thought the ideas that staff had were great. We started composting. We took a serious effort at recycling, and like there was signage they put up, and then motion sensors. And, you know,
it's actually worse for the bathrooms.
It's actually,
people don't turn them off when they leave.
It's worse for the whole building, honestly. Like, I live right next door.
Oh, the lights come on in here all the time.
I am, now that Dad Lance is around the building almost 24/7, I am just seeing how much the lights are on, and I'm having to go back in. At first I was getting a little testy with like staff and people who were leaving, Al even. I was like, hey man, make sure you guys shut the sensors off. You know, make sure you take a serious effort. Turn the lights off. And they go, we are. And I believe them, because there was plenty of times then when I would leave at the end, and
Come back 2 hours later.
Come back 2 hours later. Yeah. And then they were on. I'm like, what is going on? So there's, you know, at a certain point, it's like, how much should we throw at this? And when are we going to take nuclear energy seriously? When are we going to actually go like, hey, China and India, like, come on. You get your shit together.
Yeah. And also, China can't just
be on the consumer. You can't just be on the consumer.
But the law of diminishing returns right here.
Yeah, this is
what we're not acknowledging as being hypocritical, is that like, oh, if it's anything that's painted with the words green or sustainability, we push for it without understanding the unintended consequences of it. And here's what it is, well, you know, we want to make things up to the highest standards. Like, okay, then you are literally okay with people not, your children and young people not being able to afford housing. And then all of a sudden they're forced into apartments. And then they're not getting the benefits of literally putting, you know, like a lot of people's life savings are in housing. And if you don't advocate for that, I think you're ruining the American dream. I think you're literally ruining the American dream.
Yeah.
And that should be the other side of the equation. And we are the ones. We are the ones, because we know the codes, that can speak up and talk about it intelligently. Some Joe Smo from the street expecting them to do it is crap. And we are only taking one side.
Health, safety, welfare, right? So isn't welfare part of, isn't like security of housing and wealth generation, even if it is just your house, you know, part of that welfare part. So last segment we got here is, I want everybody to go follow this guy, because he is one of the best trolls on LinkedIn, and it's hilarious. He's never really, he doesn't get snippy and personal. Yep. But I've been following Anthony Hildewer, who I believe is out of Southern Colorado, for like 2 years now. He just goes in and to these comment sections, and he's a contrarian, and I like the way his brain thinks. He is a tech entrepreneur, and he's got a post here. It's called The 7 Habits of Highly Ineffective Managers. So we're going to first start with the behaviors of micromanagers. Number one, excessive oversight, frequent intrusive check-ins. Number two, detail orientation, over-focus on minor details. 3, limited delegation, reluctance to delegate meaningful responsibilities. 4, decision bottleneck, requires approval of all decisions. 5, lack of trust, shows little trust in employees' abilities. 6, critical feedback, focuses on errors and strict conformity. 7, fear-driven leadership, uses fear of repercussions as motivation.
Okay, let me pause on those. Reaction. Yeah. 7, of course, fear-driven leadership, no, not good. 1 through 6, I think, depends on what season you're in, right? If someone's just starting out and new,
okay,
holy cow, they do need frequent check-ins. They do need oversight of minor details. Like, and you will realize this when you build a building. Mm. It is very true. Now, reluctance to delegate meaningful responsibilities. Yeah, once they get older and more experienced, then you can do all that stuff too. But I just want to point out that dichotomy. Like, think about where they're at in their growth.
Yeah. That was a good point, honestly. That is, yeah, I'm glad you, why can't I think of this word? Antagonist? What are you, you know what word I'm still thinking about. Yeah,
people are yelling.
We're not steel manning. We're not straw manning. We are, I don't know. Think about it, Al. Good Lord.
Okay,
people are
hopefully
yelling at their headphones right now. You are, gosh, what is the word? He's being the opposite.
Adversarial?
No. All right. No. somebody will remember it. Hopefully it's Al. So the flip side of this, right, is behaviors of effective leaders. Number one, empowering employees, trusts and delegates significant responsibilities. Number two, visionary guidance, communicates a clear strategic vision. Number three, a humble approach, prioritizes team and organizational success over personal glory. Number four, constructive feedback, provides developmental feedback to promote growth. 5, calm under pressure. You're playing devil's advocate. Holy cow!
There we go.
Talk about on the spectrum.
Wow.
Okay, where was I at? Constructive feedback provides developmental feedback to promote growth. 5, calm under pressure provides stable leadership in crisis. Man, that is Al. Al is, that's what his middle name should be, actually. Al Calm Under Pressure Gore. I'm serious. Pretty calm under pressure, dude.
But I want it to be the whole thing. Provide stable leadership in crisis, Gore.
He does. 6, results oriented. Focuses on high level results through teamwork. Honestly, Al is way better under pressure than me, I think. That's my take on it. 7, building leaders develops future leaders by mentoring and challenging them. Here's interesting. And then he goes on to talk about people who, and see, he's so good. He makes memes too. He's got Stephen Crowder here. Memeing. He's so funny. Follow Anthony Hildoer. I swear to God, he's really good. Hildoer. He's hilarious. He's very thoughtful. So here's the people who prefer micromanagers. 1, prefer routine and clear instructions. This is a good point. It's like Al with his devil's advocate part of it. Right? Mm-hmm. This is really good left brain, right brain thinking. Some people need it. Yep. Al had a big epiphany once. Remember about the plumbers when we were building this? And you were talking to one of them and you were like, your lens was, you know, higher level thinking and just a broader level thinking is what I should say. And you were talking to one of the plumbers and he was like, I just want to do my job and go home.
Yes. Yes. And I was like, oh, because he was so good at his job. He was just a worker, and I would have to talk to the manager and be like, why aren't you the manager? He said, because I just want to do my job and go home to my cows.
So he might be, not that he prefers micromanagement, essentially, but just like routine.
Yep.
And clear instructions and then go home. 2, so not everybody's, we're not going to fit all the round pegs in the square holes, right?
Yep.
2, risk adverse and prefer minimizing errors. 3, less confident in their decision-making skills. So again, maybe this is somebody that entry level. You got to micromanage, honestly, right away.
Yeah.
And you're just like, okay, they're babies. They're coming out of architecture school, whatever school, and they're just like babies who are trying to learn how to sit, go on their bellies.
Yep.
And then crawl. And then walk. And their heads, you know, right away their heads are just flopping all over. Like, this is what it's like.
Yeah.
Entry-level folks, it's all good. No problem.
Yep. And then, okay. To be, what was the word? Not contrarian. Devil's advocate.
Devil's advocate.
This isn't my position, but I can see where people say, if you're making something completely new, like Facebook, okay, maybe it's okay for younger people just to do their stuff because it's completely new. Where if you're making, a building and it's just a standard building and you're not reinventing the wheel, like, okay, let's make sure these details work. Let's make sure it goes smooth.
3, less confident in their decision-making skills. These are people who... Oh, I already talked about that. Here's who people who prefer effective leaders, okay? 1, highly skilled or creative professionals. Architects, come on. 2, independent thinkers. A lot of architects. 3, ambitious individuals driven by impact and opportunities. There you have it. And then his meme is hilarious. Micromanagers chase away top performers. I agree. I agree.
Changed my mind.
When they become that level of person, and there just has to be the takeoff ramp for that. So that's all we got for you guys today. Al, do you have any words of wisdom before I take us out?
I have none. I've used them all up.
He's used them all up. If you like this episode, you know what to do. Leave us a positive comment on the YouTube. Like, subscribe. If you are on iTunes, please leave us a 5-star review. And watch out for Al on the Business of Architecture. I'm going to be on there two times sometime in the future. So we're out of here. See you.